Oh, yeah. Bringing you into a Tuesday, ready to take you home with the Sports Rush. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. We are here. White Sox baseball continues on, and if you're a White Sox fan, you can just keep it right here. We'll tell you who ends up winning the game. Of course, Detroit with the lead over the White Sox, late innings in Detroit. But appreciate you being here for the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch, 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Coming up on the show today, plenty of talk on the Colts because there's plenty of news surrounding the Colts. And a lot of that news is the fact that the Colts aren't giving us any news. We'll find out what all that means when Kevin Bowen joins us coming up at 4:35. Also in our next hour, legal matters in sports. That's what it's all about with attorney Dan Lust. He is at Sports Law Lust on Twitter. He is the host of Conduct Detrimental, a podcast that focuses on sports law. And right now we've got legal matters going on between the city of St. Louis and the NFL/St. Louis Rams, Los Angeles Rams. But exactly what is this case about? We'll talk to him about it and try to figure out if this will set a precedent for teams looking to move in the future. Well, last night, Monday Night Football, had a chance to see Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers get back to normal. All is right again for A-Rod and the Green Bay Packers. Well, at least for a night. Rodgers completes 22 of 27 passes, 255 yards, 4 touchdowns. Now, you have to remember who the opponent was. The Detroit Lions. And they have slowly tried to rebuild, but they have rebuilt primarily with skill position players, offensive line, and of course they've changed the quarterback going from an aging Matt Stafford to a little younger Jared Goff. But one area that they still have got some less than top-level talent is in the secondary, and Jimmy Garoppolo last week lit up the Lions for 17 of 25, 314 yards with a touchdown. Rodgers, 22 of 27, 255 yards. He did complete 4 touchdowns and a couple of those to the back out of the backfield, Aaron Jones. But the Packers end up winning it last night. And the Lions, though, were not without bright spots. TJ Hockenson, of course, he was a high pick for the Lions a couple of years ago, finally starting to look like his value. He ended up with 8 receptions on 9 targets for 66 yards. He now leads the NFL with 16 receptions through a couple of games. Up next, the Packers are going to be going out to San Francisco to take on the 49ers. Things may get real again for the Packers out on the West Coast. And then the Ravens will be visiting the Lions. No cakewalk for Detroit, having to defend Lamar Jackson 1 week after having to defend Aaron Rodgers. Last night, I was kind of flipping through the dial. Of course, I was trying to watch Dancing with the Stars. It was the season debut. I wanted to try to find Iman Shumpert, and I never got a chance to see him dance because I was just flipping between. Now, I will be honest. Last night, I watched almost exclusively the Manning broadcast of the game last night. In fact, I don't know that I ever even tuned in to the actual game broadcast. I was enjoying the Manning so much that I ended up not even bothering. But when they went to commercial, I flip over, and I tell you what, it's not the same without Tom Bergeron and Aaron Andrews in the ballroom. Just not the same. Tyra Banks makes it all about Tyra Banks, just the way she talks, with the fashion, with the hair. It's all about Tyra. I was thinking I was watching the Tyra Banks show featuring Dancing with the Stars contestants. And so I flipped off pretty quick a couple of times when I went over there. I just wanted to see if Iman Shumpert was dancing because I like to watch the athletes and just to see how they perform. Oh, by the way, I did catch part of The Miz. For those of you that are wrestling fans, I saw The Miz slightly and I thought he did pretty well. I don't know what his scores were because I was already flipped off before his scores came up. But that was on last night. The Voice debuted last night. Monday Night Football, Detroit and Green Bay. A lot of stuff to keep up on last night. One thing that we are still trying to figure out is the injury situation for the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts not really giving us answers. Everybody was excited yesterday. Frank Reich's going to speak on the Carson Wentz injury, and we'll find out, is Carson Wentz going to be available for Sunday? Colts have a huge game going down to Nashville to take on the Tennessee Titans. What would be Carson Wentz's availability? If Carson Wentz can't go, does that mean that Jacob Eason becomes the starting quarterback? And if he does, who's the backup going to be? Will it be Brett Hundley, who I think currently sits on the practice squad? Hundley is still on the practice squad, I think. Braden Smith, still no answer on Braden Smith. No word on Carson Wentz, other than Frank Reich did confirm that Wentz has two sprained ankles, one more severe than the other, but he's not going to give away whether or not Carson Wentz is going to play. It's his gamesmanship, and it kind of annoys the media in many ways that the Colts aren't forthcoming and just saying Carson Wentz is injured. The status is he'll be out 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a week and a half, might play for Sunday. I don't know. They don't give you an answer on it. They deferred yesterday. Frank Reich said he was going to have to meet with the medical staff and with Chris Ballard and try to figure out what the situation was about Carson Wentz. So we don't really know. And we'll find out what the latest is when Kevin Bowen joins us coming up about 20 minutes or so from now. 46862, if you've got questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862. Also today, giving you a chance to win with our Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia, not only do we have a large pizza from Pizza Hut, but we're going to give you a chance to win two tickets to see Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo live at the Hobart Theater, the arena in Troy, Ohio. It comes up September 30th. We've got two tickets. We'll throw them in with our Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. If you can beat me, you'll get the two tickets to Pat Benatar and her concert. Once again, September 30th in Troy, Ohio. And we'll play Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia coming up sometime early in hour number two today. So let's go ahead and do what we're supposed to do here. I'm going to go back and check to see the latest update on the White Sox game. And according to my report, which is very slow to get, the Tigers are leading at 5-2. White Sox batting with a couple of outs in the top of the eighth inning. There's your White Sox update for White Sox fan here on this Tuesday afternoon. Coming up next, we'll talk a little high school football.
Did you say fan?
I said White Sox fan, the one that tunes in for
okay.
Our White Sox game.
Just making sure.
I just
want to
make sure
I
keep them updated. Well, there's actually two, but one of them is on the air down the hall, so it only leaves one. Coming up next, high school football Friday night. We'll tell you where we'll be and why we're going. Actually, it's kind of nice to be warmly welcomed and actually requested. So we're going to make a trip down south coming up this Friday night. But as I was mentioning, longtime Taylor basketball coach Paul Patterson, he has passed away. And we'll tell you why that's significant. And it's going to be something that touches a lot of people from our area, because so many people in our area do have connections in some way to Taylor University down in Upland. Also on the way in hour number two, Dan Lust, sports law attorney, Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. We're keeping it cooking on a Tuesday, rolling right along here on the Sports Rush. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4-6. White Sox fan, it is now 5-3 as they go to the bottom of the eighth in Detroit. The game was moved to a day game today because of pending inclement weather in Detroit, Michigan tonight. That is your White Sox update. Coming up on the show, Kevin Bowen. We'll talk Colts football coming up in just a few minutes. Hey, this Friday, it's kind of our pleasure to be able to go down to Norwell and broadcast the East Noble Knights and the Norwell Knights. Oh, play-by-play nightmare coming up this Friday, because the Knights will always have the football. The Knights will always be on defense. Having two teams that are both Knights is one of those things I'm going to have to remember to identify by Norwell and East Noble all night long, not by their nicknames, because it will confuse people. But East Noble, who comes off that heartbreaking loss at home last week to Leo, visiting the Norwell Knights, who have just one loss, that also being to Leo. So in some ways, they might be playing for second in the NE8. But it should be a good football game. And we appreciate the people in Norwell have been patient, because for 2-3 years, they have been asking for us to come to Norwell to broadcast a game. And it just had to work out within the schedule. It had to work out where the right game was at home, and Norwell was at home on the right week. And It just all worked out. The stars aligned this week. I know Norwell people are excited about us being down there. We're taking the whole crew because we're going to have the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate pregame show broadcasting live from the Norwell tailgate starting at 6 o'clock with Jim Shevlin, Shannon Griffith, and Dute bringing you the previews of Friday night football action. Hard to believe we're already moving past the halfway point. This would be week number 6, if I'm counting correctly, Caleb. Is this unbelievable that we are already hitting the two-thirds point of the regular season?
It really is hard to believe. I mean, September just has flown by.
I mean, starting in late August, flying through September, already we are at week number 6 in the high school football season. But it will be Jim, Shannon, and Duke with the previews of week 6 action. And then after the game, we will be at the Wayndale Pizza Hut. Who have I got this week? Have I got you? Got Darren? Got you? So it'll be Caleb Hatch and me on the postgame show broadcasting live from the Wayndale Pizza Hut. And that will be right after the game ends up until 11 o'clock with scores, highlights, coaches, interviews, and more on the Indiana Physical Therapy postgame show. So whether you can join us, whether you stop by to pick up a pizza and just wave and say hi, I believe what I know about Wayndale, it's actually a server-free restaurant where you go in, order at the counter, sit down. It's much like ordering from a fast food restaurant. You place your order at the counter. You can sit down. You can then pick up your order, take it to your table. So it's a little different than some of the other pizza restaurants. But we will be there in Wayndale after the game. East Noble, Norwell, our high school football game of the week coming up this Friday. Hey, our sincere sympathies, condolences go out to the Taylor basketball family. Longtime coach Paul Patterson. And when we say longtime coach, we're talking about 34 years he coached down at Taylor. Last season was 2012-2013. Finished his illustrious career with 734 total wins, 15 league titles, 14 national tournament appearances, and just a special person for anyone that has attended or played basketball at Taylor. But he passed away. It was announced by Taylor University earlier today. So certainly our thoughts go out to everybody that is connected in some way to either Taylor University, Paul Patterson, or the Taylor basketball family. So college football coming up this Saturday. Notre Dame prepping for Wisconsin. The game will be played at Soldier Field. It's supposed to be, I guess, a neutral site, question mark. Soldier Field is not going to be neutral. Soldier Field is going to be Notre Dame part two, or you know, Notre Dame the second or junior, whatever, however you want to identify it. This will be basically a Notre Dame home game in Chicago.
Yeah. And they have designated tickets for both teams, but outside of that, as far as the free, well, not free, but the open market, it'll be mostly Notre Dame fans, destination city fans from the East Coast and all across the country will fly in for this game for Notre Dame.
Well, that's the thing is most of the people, a lot of people come in for Notre Dame home games in South Bend. They fly into Chicago anyway, and then get a rental car, take it on over to South Bend for the weekend. And so for a lot of Notre Dame fans, this is going to be added convenience to be able to just fly into Chicago, stay in Chicago, and watch Notre Dame play against Wisconsin. I don't know. I know it's going to be a lot of this game's going to be decided at the line of scrimmage on how well Notre Dame matches up with Wisconsin up front. But I just think there's too many athletes and skill players for Notre Dame that I think will win their one-on-ones that I feel like Notre Dame is going to somehow find a way to win this game. And it might not be a high-scoring game, probably a game that stays high teens into the 20s. But I just feel like Notre Dame will make the play or two it needs to, whether that's special teams, whether that's a big play. I think Notre Dame will find a way to win. So far, that's been their season, just finding ways to win, even when you don't have the dominant talent advantage. And I think they'll continue that streak against Wisconsin.
Yeah, Notre Dame's been tested more. I mean, Wisconsin's played two games, right? I mean, they lost to Penn State to open the season at home in a very ugly game.
Right.
Especially first half.
Struggled offensively.
Then they played, I think, Eastern Michigan in week two, which was a gimme game. And now they're going to face another legitimate opponent here. And Notre Dame has improved after each game somehow. I mean, they've continually improved. They have, I think, the more elite players at the skill positions. They're going to have the best player on the field in Kyle Hamilton. I think Notre Dame has more weapons offensively in the passing game, and that includes both running backs. I mean, they're almost better weapons in the passing game than the running game for Notre Dame at the moment.
Well, I think, too, you've got to consider what will be the effect of Jack Cohn playing against his former team, former teammates, the place that he was the starter and eventually was replaced. That's in part part of the reason why he ended up going to Notre Dame. And what effect that will have. I mean, it could basically make him try too hard. But I think usually when you see these situations, the quarterbacks step up, they play pretty well when they're going against their former team. First of all, they do know how to attack them because they're pretty familiar with the personnel that they're going to line up against. And in this case, Jack Cohn, who was there up until last season, didn't have to sit out a year. So it's very fresh as far as the talent that Wisconsin has, and Jack Cohn having familiarity with that talent. I think it's going to be an advantage for Notre Dame. That's why I think, even though the Irish, are 5.5-point dogs in this one?
Yeah, it's puzzling because Graham Mertz, for all the hype he had with his first start last year, has struggled ever since. And on the season, I mean, he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass. He has two interceptions. He hasn't thrown a touchdown pass.
Well, every pass he tried to throw against Penn State was directly over the middle of the field. He couldn't throw the sideline throw. And that's one of those throws they say is an NFL-type throw, the deep sideline route, especially if you're throwing it from one hash to the other side of the field. And I watched that Penn State game, and every time Wisconsin got the ball and they were trying to force it with the passing game late to try to get a score against the Nittany Lions, every pass, middle of the field. It's almost like, you know, those horses when they get in the race and they got the blinders on the side of their eyes so they can't see the horses on the sides of them and stuff. They can't get freaked out. That's kind of the way I felt that he was playing. It was like he only saw between the hash marks. He didn't see receivers sideline to sideline. And believe me, you see that enough. And if it becomes a pattern, teams are going to defend it and prepare for it. But I noticed that against Penn State, every throw was basically between the hash marks.
Well, and, you know, one of the weaknesses of Notre Dame is, I mean, obviously the offensive line has been a work in progress, but it's getting better game by game. And part of that is due to injuries, similar to the Colts. But I think the one weakness outside of Kyle Hamilton, the secondary is not very good, but they played really well last week against Purdue.
Up. Yeah,
and
they stepped up.
If Wisconsin can't take advantage of that, they're in for a long game.
And I just think from an athletic standpoint, the personnel matches up pretty well for Notre Dame against Wisconsin. Other than, you know, the physicality at the line of scrimmage, that'll be the challenge for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. But if they can handle that, and they don't even have to win it at the line of scrimmage. They just can't get beat at the line of scrimmage with the Wisconsin offensive line. I don't think this is quite as good, and I probably will get in trouble for saying this. I don't think this is quite as good an offensive line as Wisconsin has had in some of the past years. It's still a typical Wisconsin offensive line, but I think it's a step down. But I also think Notre Dame has taken a bit of a step down at the line of scrimmage on both sides. So I think as long as Notre Dame handles things at the line of scrimmage, they're going to be fine. They've got playmakers that will make plays. Notre Dame, I think, can win this game in a close contest. I like Notre Dame plus the points at this point. If you're getting 5.5, I would take it and take Notre Dame against Wisconsin at Soldier Field. I'll tell you what, Indiana has a must win against Western Kentucky. There's no question. And we talked about the Hilltoppers and about how they've got such a high-scoring offense and the threat that they are offensively against Indiana's defense. That's going to be where the game is won. Indiana's defense is going to have to play a terrific game against Western Kentucky. Indiana going on the road, which is a bit of a surprise because most of these games are always played at the Power Conference team. But Indiana going on the road, here's the deal. Think about the schedule, Caleb. Here's what Indiana has after Western Kentucky. Now, remember, Indiana is 1-2 right now. They lose to Western Kentucky. It'll be a bad loss, but it'll be 1-3. Here's what's ahead for the Hoosiers. At Penn State versus Michigan State at home. Spartans are playing really well. Then they've got Ohio State coming into Bloomington. Then they go on the road to Maryland, and despite what Maryland did and didn't do against Illinois, still, Tagovailoa is a solid quarterback, and that's a good football team. They are capable of scoring points. I don't like playing at Maryland right now. I think that's a good football team. And then at Michigan, that stretch, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State, Maryland, Michigan, going through the East, that is a tough, tough stretch for a Hoosiers team. Even if they're 2-2, they may end up dropping all five of those games. So, huge game, I think, for the Indiana Hoosiers against Western Kentucky. We'll take a break. When we come back on the other side, we've got Kevin Bowen from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. We'll talk Colts football and get the latest on what's happening with Carson Wentz and the Colts quarterback situation. That's next on The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Coming up in our next hour, we've got attorney Dan Lust. He is going to talk about the situation between the city of St. Louis and the Los Angeles Rams, about the relocating of professional sports franchises and what's at stake with this lawsuit and what's behind it. We'll get details with Dan Lust coming up at 5:20. Sunday, we saw the Colts fall to 0-2. So many issues to talk about, and let's do that on our Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. Morning host Kevin Bowen joining us. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hey, what's up, Brett? How you doing?
I'm doing well, better than the Colts. Sunday, not happy about what the Colts did against the Rams. And, of course, a lot of people didn't expect that it would be easy in the first two games. But when you look at this game Sunday, the Colts let one slip away, having the ball, having so many opportunities. They moved the ball so well against the Rams defense, got themselves into positions to score, came away with no points. First of all, first and goal at the one-yard line, three straight runs, boom, 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 right into the back of their offensive lineman. Nothing there. Then the bootleg ends up in the sack. It was ugly. And then the shovel pass didn't go any better when they had an opportunity even later. I got to ask, is this bad play calling, bad execution, little bit of both? How do you explain this?
Yeah, I would say definitely a little bit of both. Let's start with that opening series. Like you said, a first and goal at the one. You have an offensive line that has, you know, four top 40 picks across it, five of your top 10 highest paid players across that line from a cap hit standpoint, and the inability to get 1 yard, as Quentin Nelson said accurately after the game, it's unacceptable, flat out. So that's on the execution part. Now, to the coaching aspect, I thought just the personnel groupings were too similar throughout that. I thought at times you could have thrown a wide out or two out on the field a little bit more, kind of spread them out. I've always been a big advocate to get Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Taylor in the backfield together. That's something that I feel like is an area the Colts could tap into more. They did in the second half and converted a 3rd-and-2 with those two guys in there. I'd like to see just some individual Mike Strawn, Mo Alie-Cox, Michael Pittman, Hines as well, just kind of some one-on-one matchups there too. And then lastly, I just felt like going under center every time there was something that was an issue. Fast forward to that next series, like you said, the shovel pass. You know, that was a 1st-and-goal to 10, Brett, and those just aren't, you know, automatic touchdowns. You had the 7-yard gain immediately to Pittman. You had Jonathan Taylor stuffed on 2nd down. 3rd down, the shovel. Two things. I think you got out-coached, and the Rams just out-executed you. The Rams made it very clear after that play that was something that their scout team ran against them all week long. So they felt like they knew that that was coming. And if you watch Aaron Donald and you watch Troy Reader, who makes that pick, they read it beautifully. I think Carson Wentz should have at least kind of looked in the direction to know that Jack Doyle got hit off stride, but it was pretty bang-bang there. So I'm a big believer in kind of taking each of these goal line scenarios as a life of their own. You know, you look at the red zone, the goal line stats under Frank Reich. The Colts have actually been pretty good in those areas, but clearly right now it's impacted them the first 2 weeks of the season.
Another question, how many reps did they get on that play doing it together with Jack Doyle, who's had a number of days of rest in practice, Carson Wentz, of course, who was out with the injuries, and then the COVID list. I wonder how many times they actually ran that play together in the preseason, because that is a timing play. It has to be executed really with almost perfect timing, because you've got a very small window to try to slip that football, and the timing just wasn't there. As you said, Doyle got kind of knocked off stride, and the timing got broken down.
Yeah, I think it's a great point you bring up, Brett. I mean, let's take it a step further. How much practice time is your center, Ryan Kelly, got in that play? How much practice time is your right tackle? Julian Davenport, I think, was over there on that. I don't know if Davenport's played much right tackle, if at all, in a game until Sunday with the Colts. So, I think all of that is a fair statement to make. You know, I thought coming into the season, the lack of practice time for Carson Wentz would have him a little bit more up and down. That hasn't been the case. I think he's given you good football. But I do feel like the lack of just offensive continuity, Wentz being in there, that has definitely impacted some things. And clearly, when you play a schedule as daunting as this one out of the gate, that's going to get exposed.
How big of a factor is continuity? You mentioned the word. I'll bring it up. How big of a factor is the continuity with this offensive line? Because they've played awful, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. Obviously they've had injuries and COVID situations with several important guys on that offense. I think it was a missed opportunity at times to play some frontline guys in the preseason when you had the chance there. And then granted, I just feel like your offensive line, going back to that point, they just haven't been at the standard that you need them to be. And I know a lot of the attention has gone to the pass protection, which is totally fair. 21 hits for Carson Wentz in 2 games is absolutely unacceptable. But, Brett, I think you look at this rushing offense. You know, let's just kind of take the 3 running backs the Colts have played this season versus their own. You know, Chris Carson, over 4 yards per carry. Darrell Henderson and Sony Michel this past week, both of them over 4 yards per carry. And then you look at the Colts, and Jonathan Taylor's under 4 yards. Nyheim Hines is under 4 yards. Marlon Mack is under 4 yards. I mean, that, to me, might be the bigger issue. This team has stopped the run and run it very, very effectively under Frank Reich, and yet they haven't been able to do that at all. And the flip side of that is Matt Eberflus in the defense has stopped the run really well, really, really well, and you haven't been able to do that either.
I'll tell you what, one factor I think against the running game, at least in my mind, is Bobby Okereke. I think he's a liability against the run. He is 6-7 yards downfield. I don't think he comes in and actually fills the hole. I've not been impressed with what he does, and if teams run away from Darius Leonard, Okereke's got to come up and make plays closer to the line of scrimmage. He's not making them. That's my commentary as far as the Colts against the run. As far as the running game, that was a point we brought up yesterday. This was a team that was built, and we were sold on the idea that this was a team that was going to run the football, control the clock, take all the pressure in the world off of Carson Wentz. They can't do it. Why?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Again, the line has not played at the level that you need them to. And I just think in general, the Colts have failed Carson Wentz through 2 weeks. You know, when you look at the reasons why the Colts felt like Carson Wentz was worthy of giving up the amount of draft picks and the financial stake as well, they felt like they could provide more support. The support certainly was in the offensive line. The support certainly was more of a consistent, productive run game. Continuity at the wide receiver position. You haven't had that with T.Y. Hilton missing time and Paris Campbell missing Sunday. And then coaching as well. Clearly there's a disconnect late in the Philly era with Carson Wentz. And I would say in all 4 of those areas, you failed Carson Wentz to varying degrees. So I think that is where you put it at right now is, yes, you've played 2 really, really good teams. But I think when you talk about the strength of the Indianapolis Colts, how they're built, their philosophy of what they believe in. It's through the trenches. It's with the run game on both sides of the ball. And that hasn't been there. And I think that is what's particularly disappointing to a lot of fans right now. And then also you factor in, and some of that has clearly contributed to Carson Wentz now being hurt. When you factor all that together, it's a little bit of a deja vu feeling for Colts fans.
That is the transition to the next question. What is the status of Carson Wentz?
Yeah, you know, as of now, the guy's dealing with sprained ankles on both feet. I think NFL Network reported, maybe it was Zach Kiefer actually from The Athletic, I think first had it, that Carson Wentz was seen with, I think, the right foot in a boot and on a scooter coming out of the facility last night. I'll put on my amateur medical hat, but that doesn't sound great for me and him being ready for Sunday. I know there's been some reports that the Colts, you know, we'll test that out tomorrow, see where he's at exactly. Obviously, you want to keep him off that. But just given how severe that injury looked. I mean, you watch that on replay. Fox really slowed it down that second or third time. Man, I mean, that's a lot. And 21 hits and 2 sprained ankles for a guy that's got to get out of the pocket and make plays. You know, how does that not impact him?
So what would be the status you'd have? Eason then stepping in to be the starter. And is Hundley still on the practice squad? Would he come up then to be the backup?
That would be my assumption there. And, you know, Sam Ehlinger remains on injured reserve. I know he's a guy that probably some fans definitely recall in the preseason and getting a lot of starting reps in training camp as well. Injured his knee in that preseason finale. So he is on IR for at least one more week. Likely a little bit more, but at least one more week. So no roster move today. So Jacob Eason, Brett Hundley, those are your healthy quarterbacks going into this week. And we'll obviously see where Carson Wentz is.
What about the health of other players? What about Braden Smith? What about Paris Campbell?
Yeah, Frank Reich was not in the giving mood yesterday at all on the injury front. I think a little bit more. Frank usually doesn't give a lot. He sometimes gives a little. And I just think the magnitude of this game, you know, and in general, maybe just a little heat rising. You know, 0-2, your quarterback's hurt, you got 3 straight road games. It's really a foreign spot for Frank Reich to be in as a head coach in the NFL. So I think he kind of felt a little bit of that based off how he reacted to some comments during his Monday Zoom call. So yeah, no updates there on on Smith Campbell. Xavier Rhodes, the other name to remember too. You know, the fact that they didn't put Xavier Rhodes on IR originally, that would be he's out 3 games. Well, if he were to miss this Sunday, that'd be 3 games. So why wouldn't you put him on IR originally? So that I think is something to watch. And, you know, I don't know. I might make the argument, Brett, that I'd rather have Xavier Rhodes and Braden Smith this week. Now, some will disagree and saying, have you seen how the O-line's played, this and that. But, man, you know, Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, I mean, that is a fearsome duo with, obviously, Derrick Henry. I mean, it's the most potent skill group you've seen yet. And we've already seen Tyler Lockett and Cooper Kupp go off while, you know, the running backs the Colts have faced, even though they're not Derrick Henry, they still have had their way.
A big comeback by Tennessee against Seattle to come back and win it in overtime. Now it puts even a greater emphasis on this game for the Colts. It's only week 3, and there's a lot of football left to be played, so I don't want to say it's must win. But when you look at the situation of head-to-head, the importance of divisional games, you only have so many of them to play. You don't want to go 2 games down and have a loss in the head-to-head to Tennessee really this early. You'd have to play the rest of the season playing catch-up and hoping for help along the way, especially since you only play Tennessee one more time the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. I mean, it's about if you want to win the division, it's about as must-win as it gets for week 3. I mean, I like numbers, but I'm not going to nerd out and look at all the probabilities of what this win would mean for the division, things like that. Yeah, I can't go there. But this is huge, just absolutely massive. I know Tennessee, like you said, got a huge, huge win coming back and beating Seattle. These teams will play again on Halloween. At the very least, you got to split that. And if you split these two meetings, you know, like you said, you still got to make up at least 2 games on them, and we'll see how the rest of the schedule plays out. So this is massive. You know, I felt like 2-3 through the first 5 games with a healthy Carson Wentz was about what I expected. The big thing for me, Brett, honestly, and I guess if you want to shrink it from this 5-game gauntlet to the 3 games right here, if I were, a Colts season ticket holder, I would have taken 1-2 out of the gate if the one win was Tennessee. I know some people, maybe wouldn't have gone there, but if you can beat Tennessee and you're 1-2, that game just means so much for the division. So, massive. The Colts have had great success down there in Nashville. But again, Tennessee, a lot of momentum, you would think, after last week's win.
Boys, appreciate the time, Kevin. We'll talk to you again.
All right, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Yep, Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Of course, Kevin Bowen, morning show host on it. 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. Down in Indianapolis. We take a quick time out. Coming up in our next hour, Dan Lust, law attorney, sports law attorney, who handles everything that is involved with sports and legal matters. And of course, he has been covering things from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Bauer. And now one of the big cases that's getting some national attention, the St. Louis community suing the NFL and the Los Angeles Rams and Rams owner Stan Kroenke. And so we're going to find out exactly what's behind this, what kind of a precedent it could set, and what is the, I guess, legal grounds they are basing this lawsuit on. It's all coming up with Dan Luss coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. Plenty of talk, too, including the Padres. You know, Tin Caps fans following the Padres, it's not going well right now for San Diego, fading further and further out of playoff contention. I'll give you my thoughts on that coming up after 5 o'clock. Plus, we'll give you a chance to win with Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. We've got two tickets to see Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo live at Hobart Arena in Troy, Ohio, coming up next week. If you want to play Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia, stay close to the radio. We'll give you a cue to call in and have a chance to play coming up just after 5 o'clock. You're listening to The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.